Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Fairtax Time Radio with your host, John Wesley Nobles. This is Bill Payne. Join me in the chat room at blogtalkradio.com.
Politicians in Hollywood, they have their own agenda. Ripping up our rights. They don't care who gets offended. They lie to our faces every day.
Special thanks go out to Small Town for the intro music, Our America.
But I made up my mind, I'm gonna make a change. Take back what's right, it's not theirs anyway, it's still yours and mine. It's still Our America.
Hear more Small Town music at smalltowndays.com. And now it's time for Fairtax Time Radio with your host, John Wesley Noble.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
Yeah, I got to laugh about that, too. I had some fun putting that one together. This is Bill Payne sitting in for John Wesley Noble. John's with us here on another line, and I'm going to bring him up here in just a second. Wanted to thank our friends from the band Small Town for that introductory music. You can, if you like. They've got a lot of stuff on their website, and you can check out their music on their website at smalltowndays.com. Pretty good stuff there. So, without further ado, we have a great guest tonight, I've got to tell you. I've read this man's main book that he's had. His name is John Gaver. That's G-A-V-E-R. And he has a website called therichdontpaytax.com. All one word. And his book is The Rich Don't Pay Tax, or Do They? And therein lies the question. And so that he is the author of, and also a new book coming out. And I personally get more information from this man's blog on his website, therichdontpaytax.com, than you could find in most books. And we're going to discuss one subject this evening about which everybody seems to be talking, or not everybody, but a lot of people are talking about the Rubio Lee tax plan. And let's see here. I'm going to bring up John Wesley Nobles. Are you?
I am here, Bill, and thank you very much, sir. And yeah, it's a pleasure to have John Gaver back on. He is probably the most informed statistician, expert on taxes around, and always has a lot to share. And you know, after looking at the McCain on the mind, I must be thinking about our friend Alex over in Arizona. Herman Cain with the 999 plan, and we remember Zach's position and a couple other people that were candidates way back when that were pulled into the Cain 999 plan. And of course, that wasn't much of a deal. A lot of smoke and mirrors. And I'll tell you what, I think John Gaver is going to tell us a lot about the smoke and mirrors, and that this Rubio Lee plan has more holes than a piece of Swiss cheese. And Bill, let's bring on John and let him take off and run with the subject.
Okay, we are now back on the air. I had to recall the whole mess. So you've been talking about what you said.
Okay, we'll start all over again. Okay, well, I'll start all over again, Bill. Thank you again for the intro. And I'll tell you, I'm just so pleased that we're going to have John Gaver on with us tonight. He is, without a doubt, one of the leading tax experts around the country and a great statistician. Everybody should buy his book that Bill previously mentioned. It's a great book. And I'll tell you, he's got a lot to share with us tonight on the Rubio Lee tax scam, I mean plan. And, you know, it's full of more holes than a piece of Swiss cheese, as John would say. And I think I'm inclined to agree with that. And my take is exactly what John's is, that the Rubio Lee plan is a political gimmick and no more than that. And I don't want to take up his time because I know he has a lot of information to share with us tonight. So, Bill, why don't you bring on John and we'll get rolling here.
Okay, I'll do that here just momentarily. I wanted to let everybody know that if you are in the chat room and listening, I'm glad to have you with us. We'd like you to also consider calling in with comments and questions here in a little bit. If you are listening on your phone and you've called in and you do want to talk, please press 1 on your phone. That alerts us to let me know that you do want to speak. And if you don't do that, I ain't going to call on you. You got that? So if you don't like that, we'll give all your money back. All right, so without further ado, I'm going to bring up our good friend John Gaver. John, do we have you with us again?
Yes, I'm right here.
All right, welcome, John. I'm going to let you and John, the other John there, take it over, and I'm just going to shut up and push the buttons when necessary.
You are a gentleman, Bill, and hey, with two Johns, how can you go wrong? John, I'm telling you, I think you picked the perfect discussion for tonight. This Rubio Lee tax plan, or some people call it the tax scam, certainly is reminiscent of something that happened not too long ago. And why don't you tell us a little bit about the book that we all love so much and the new one that you have coming out, and then just go ahead and run with the ball on the Rubio Lee tax plan.
On the book, first off, what I'd like to do is if you've got a pencil and paper, anybody listening wants to get the book at a discount. I set up a discount earlier today that if you go out to the website, therichdontpaytax.com, and click on purchase paperback, that's the one that the discount is on. I can't offer discounts on electronic versions, but the paperback version, if you click on purchase paperback, that will take you to a page where you can place the order. And when you have a place down there to put in a discount code, the discount code is 3, B as in Baker, Q as in Queen, D as in Dog, N as in Nancy, 3, J as in John, 3. So if you put that in, you'll get a $1.50 discount off of the regular price of the book. So that's just for listeners. It'll be good for 24 hours.
So, that's good, anyway, man. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. The rich don't pay tax, or do they? And that one I used actual IRS collections data to identify who really pays tax. And what you find out is that the top 1% pay 1.75 times their tax load based on income, while the bottom 50% pay one quarter of their tax load based on income. And of course, when people hear me say that, I've had people in an audience say, "Well, you know what? You got to give the poor a chance. You got to give them a bit of a break." But that's pretty much of a break when you consider that if you're in the bottom 50% of taxpayers, the Joint Committee on Taxation tells us that 51% of Americans don't earn enough money to owe any income tax. So if you're in the bottom 50% of taxpayers, you're in the top economic half of the richest nation on the planet. We're considered the sixth richest nation on the planet. Some of the Arab nations have slipped in above us now. But, you know, so this goes into that. It goes into what's been happening, the number of Americans renouncing citizenship because of this unfair treatment, and of course the ones who are being unfairly treated are the rich, and they're the people that pay most of the tax. So anyway, get the book, The Rich Don't Pay Tax, or Do They? And it's available in paperback, Kindle, and Nook formats, and the discount applies to the paperback. The next book coming out is going to be an analysis. It had initially been planned to be an analysis of several tax plans, but after CPAC, I realized that all of the Hall-Rabushka VAT, all the VAT plans are basically not being discussed anymore. It's down to the fair tax and a flat tax. And, of course, the flat tax is probably the worst thing that could happen to real tax reform, because once it's passed, the people in power, the power brokers, the leadership of both parties are going to be telling us, well, we can't talk about any other tax reform because we just passed tax reform and we've got to give it a, we have to give it time to work. And the key word is time, because what we've got right now with the fair tax is inertia. And inertia is a factor of time, how far you go over a period of time. You've got that inertia. Well, we've got inertia. Every year, the fair tax is introduced with more co-sponsors, and every year, or every session of Congress, it ends with more co-sponsors than it had the session before. In 2014, we ended the 113th Congress with 83 sponsors and co-sponsors. This has the leadership and the power brokers scared. We have inertia. We are moving forward, and they can't stop it. And they know the only way that they can stop that inertia is if they trick us into stopping it. And a flat income tax or this new thing, the Rubio Lee tax plan, will, if it's passed, it will give them the ability to stop our inertia, because what they'll say as soon as we start bringing up the fair tax again is, well, guys, we just passed tax reform. We've got to give the flat tax or this Rubio Lee plan a chance to work. We've got to give it time. Well, what that means is they want us to stop, slow down our inertia. Well, inertia works two ways. One is a body in motion tends to stay in motion in the same direction, and the other is a body at rest tends to stay at rest. Well, right now, we're moving forward, and if we stop, we're now at rest, and it's hard to get started again. A flat income tax or anything else that doesn't get rid of the IRS only gives them the ability to say, guys, we can't talk about this now. We've just passed tax reform. We've got to give it time to work. And they will milk that for the next decade. And all during that time, they're going to be saying, well, yeah, we got problems with the flat tax, but we're tweaking it. Well, tweaking it means that they're going to be adding more brackets back in and adding more deductions and exclusions and carve-outs and such. So the last thing we want is a flat income tax. And I've heard my own senator from Texas here, Ted Cruz, who I campaigned for hard. I put out signs and made phone calls and everything, and I've heard him say in the same breath, flat tax and abolish the income, abolish the IRS, at same sentence, same breath. But you can't abolish the IRS as long as you tax income. They might change the name of the organization, but nothing really changes. So anyway, but let's go ahead and talk about this new Rubio Lee plan for a few moments, because this thing, I'm surprised. When I heard Rubio's name attached to it, I wasn't surprised. But when I saw Mike Lee's name attached to this, I was devastated. I thought he was one of us. But this plan looks like it was written on K Street. It was written by K Street lobbyists. I would almost be willing to bet on it. Well, they use all kinds of misconceptions and such to try to sell it. One of the things, for example, is they say that, oh, we're going to eliminate double taxation on parents. What they're doing is they want to buy parents' votes, so they're going to increase what they give to parents as a for raising children. And they don't want to tell you and me that that's all they're doing is trying to buy the parents' votes, because they don't want to lose our votes. So they say, well, parents are being double taxed, because, you see, they're raising children and they're paying payroll tax while they're raising children who are going to grow up and pay payroll tax. What? What's wrong with that statement? The payroll tax is a pay-as-you-go system. You're not paying for your children's care in the future. You're not paying for their retirement. You're paying for your own. So they're using that to try to sell this, to try to get some votes without alienating other people. But the really bad part comes in the way that it treats corporations and small business, and particularly in relation to interest, because what it does is it gets rid of all tax on interest income, all tax on interest, period, except for banks, and you still get your mortgage deduction for taxes paid on a mortgage. Banks still pay tax on their interest income. But in general, businesses don't pay tax on interest, and they can't take a deduction for interest paid. It sounds like a good idea in the beginning, but what it actually turns out to be is a major benefit for big businesses and a major handicap for small business. Under the current income tax, both big businesses and small businesses can take deductions on capital expense. They can depreciate this capital expense over years. Well, under the Rubio Lee plan, they can take the deduction all at the same time, the same year. Well, the big businesses, what they end up doing is they've got other things that they can use for that deduction and take full advantage of that same year deduction in that year. But the small business, not having a bunch of different divisions around the country and everything else, have to take that deduction and carry it forward over a period of years. The advantage is to the big business, who can take the full deduction in the same year. But it gets worse. Let's say you've got two corporations. I call them mega corporation and small business LLC. And you take the mega corporation and small business LLC, both competing in the same marketplace, and they both decide to build a new plant. They both go out and buy property, both build a building, put all the equipment in it and everything else. Under today's system, both of them would borrow the money because the interest is deductible. They would both borrow the money, build a building, pay taxes, but they would be able to deduct the amount of interest that they paid. Therefore, they're still pretty much on parity. Under the Rubio Lee plan, the megacorp, they're going to look at it and say, well, we don't get to deduct our interest, so we'll go to our cash reserves. They go to the cash reserves, buy the property, build a building, put all the equipment inside it and everything with cash. They pay 100%, they pay tax on 100% of their income. Okay, this is normal. But small business LLC, they still have to go to the bank. They're not big enough to issue bonds or sell stocks or anything else. So they have to go to the bank and borrow money. Now they build a building and everything, and now they have to pay it back over years with interest. Well, since they bought property to mortgage, the large part of what they're paying that first few years is interest. But they don't get to deduct that interest like they used to. They still have to pay tax on 100% of their income, and they cannot deduct all of that interest. Again, advantage the big corporation. The small business gets hit really, really hard. Like I say, this whole thing sounds like it was written on K Street, but there's some other problems with it. By not being able to deduct interest, and yet then having to pay tax on everything, this violates what's called generally accepted accounting principles, GAAP, which is a long-standing set of standards for accounting in the United States. This is how you calculate your real profits and losses. Well, under this system, you'll now have to have GAAP accounting, but you're going to have to keep a second set of books to calculate your fictional profits and losses for tax purposes. Well, for the big business, you don't have your accounting is a very, very minute part of your budget. For that small business, you've just doubled his cost, and that's not a small part of his budget. So you're hitting the small businesses really, really hard under this new system. I don't see how they have the gall to come forward with such a bill. It's absolutely amazing. What do you think?
Boy, I'll tell you, John, you make some very, very good points here, sir. And as you say, it's a scam. It's smoke and mirrors. I think that Washington has pulled the wool over the taxpayers' eyes for so many years. They don't think anybody is going to challenge them any longer. And, you know, when I think back with your opening remarks about the flat tax, well, we've really had a flat tax. We started as a flat tax in 1913, and look what we've morphed into. And so when you say that they'll start there, stop the inertia, and we'll morph into this thing all over again, how right you are. The whole thing
is... In 1913, it wasn't entirely flat, but it was, you know...
Kind of flat, wasn't it, where they started with, I think it was the top 70, you had to earn $75,000 a year, and it was
flat because nobody made that much money.
Yeah, very few people did. I think they used to say...
Effectively, only two brackets, although there really was five. There was only two, I think, actually paid in that.
Yeah. I think what you say is true there, because I remember my grandmother, you know, we lived in Connecticut back at that time, and she said, oh, we don't have to worry about that such thing, because all the rich people up in Newport, Rhode Island are going to be paying the taxes. Well, of course, that's where a lot of rich folks lived on the East Coast, and most people weren't going to be paying taxes at all, so they didn't worry about it. I like your comments, John, about the inertia, what you said about every year we've been gaining co-sponsors on HR 25. And my goodness, on the very first day when Rob Woodall reintroduces HR 25 this year, I think he came in with 62 co-sponsors on the first day, which is absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, we've been building a lot of inertia, too, out here in the public, in the court of public opinion. I heard from Nancy Kesey earlier in the day, and she told me that since yesterday afternoon on PopVox alone, over 200 and some souls have voted in support of HR 25, the fair tax. So people are really getting interested in it, and I think they're seeing through the smoke and mirrors, and that, you know, they're beginning to understand that these folks that we elect to represent us in Washington are representatives, go back and they sell taxpayers. And as you alluded to earlier, you know, this is where they make the deals down on K Street, because who are the folks down on K Street? Most of them are former Congress people that are now lobbyists. And with 35,000 lobbyists in Washington, D.C., it's pretty easy to find one and cut a deal with somebody. So I think you've hit it all spot on. More than half the
lobbyists in Washington, D.C. are tax lobbyists.
And yes, they are.
Who are left lobby on tax issues, among other things. So,
yes, indeed.
As the fair tax passed, half of the offices on K Street will be empty.
Right you are. And I think another thing is happening, John, and you kind of underscored it. I think people are getting the real true picture, and they understand that a lot of these folks that we send to Washington end up enriching their own self-worth and good in terms of money, and we end up and we are presented with the bill, and they don't hesitate to ask for a tip, and we see that day in and day out, and we're going to have to stand up and really be counted. I don't think that Washington is ever going to willingly surrender that power, being able to broker tax deals. We're going to actually have to grab them and drag them down the street, kicking and screaming. And as my good friend Paul Hanisch would say, we're going to have to inflict a little bit of political pain just to get their attention. So I really appreciate your comments tonight.
One of the things that really bothers me is when I see good people. I've always respected Mike Lee, but when I saw this Rubio Lee plan, it was like, this can't be coming from a conservative. I think he's an honest man. I think he really is trying to do the right thing, but I think that he's been fooled, because the power brokers, and that includes the leadership of both parties, they're out there trying to make sure that they don't lose the income tax. One of the things I like to do is I compare politics to something I used to do. I used to be a very, very good chess player. And in chess, your king is protected at all costs. If he gets put in check and he can't move without being in check, it's game over, checkmate, you lose. So you protect him at all costs, but your queen is the most powerful. Well, in tax reform, the income tax is the other guy's king. The queen is where the power is, because the queen on that chessboard can move in any direction, and she's the most powerful piece. And in the income tax, the progressiveness of the income tax is where they get their power. But they're willing to sacrifice the queen to keep the income tax, which is the king. And that's what they're doing right now. If they see us getting to the point to where we're about to put their king in check and they're not going to have any place to go, we're going to pass the fair tax. So they're willing to say, oh, well, we'll give you a flat income tax. And, you know, that'll be a step. That's the first step towards the fair tax. We need to pass the flat income tax because the fair tax is too big a step. We don't want to do that. We'll do it a little bit at a time. Well, as soon as they pass a flat income tax or this Rubio Lee plan, when we start talking about the fair tax again, they're just going to say, well, yeah, but we've got to give this chance to stabilize. We've got to give it time to work. And it'll be 10 years before they're going to be willing to talk about anything else again. They're trying to kill our inertia. And Ted Cruz, again, I sat there and heard him say, we have to pass a flat income tax and abolish the IRS. Just like that, in the same breath. You cannot abolish the IRS. You've still got 156 million taxpayers under an income tax. I've heard some people say, well, they're going to try to put it off to the states and let the states do the audits so the federal government doesn't have all that information. But wait a minute. Who audits the states? The federal government. And when the federal government, when an auditor comes in and says, we want to see this information, what does he get? He gets exactly the information that he asked for. And if they say, well, why haven't you audited this Tea Party group over here and all of these taxpayers that are members of this Tea Party, why haven't you audited them? Well, guess who gets audited next year? By the states, and the federal government has that information. You cannot get around the IRS and the federal government getting that information as long as you have a tax on income. It's just not going to happen. Do you agree?
I totally agree with you, John. You're spot on. The taxing income, savings, and investment is counterproductive. No good will come of continuing the practice. Another thing is, in the conversation of, and you are so right, they're handing us, putting a carrot out there to get us to slow down, to stop our inertia. And what will happen here is that, we'll still end up with an IRS, which, as we know certainly recently with the IRS scandals, and I think many of us have seen Unfair exposing the IRS, and it wasn't only with conservative groups either. where people have really been used and abused by that agency that has such awesome power. And I don't see that stopping. And another thing with this Rubio Lee plan or any income tax plan, they're going to keep the payroll tax, and that's a big chunk of money. And you know, all this represents power to the few, power to the establishment politicians, and we again are robbed of our freedom of choice out here in the marketplace. So I'm with you on that. I think we move on and we continue to wage war on this battle. We're going to have to bring it to resolution here at some point, and to just throw in the towel now would be a foolish mistake on our part.
Right. This is just the you know, sacrificing the queen and making it look like you're going to win the game. But again, you know, a chess game and politics are a lot the same, because both of them involve deep strategy. Both of them are long games. The guy who plays the best long game is not going to lose. Now, what doesn't say he's going to win, because the main thing about chess and the main thing about politics is mistakes. In chess, if you play a perfect game, it could be the longest game in history, but if you play a perfect game, it's a stalemate. In politics, it's pretty much the same thing. It's about mistakes. The guy who makes the first mistake or the most mistakes is the guy who loses. And what they're doing is they're trying to put their queen out there, and I've done this 100 times, put the queen out there and let the queen fall into risk, and nobody, you know, they think, oh, he's exposed his queen, and they go take it. Well, it takes them 2 moves to get there, and I just gained 2 moves on him because I used my moves to get towards his king. And it might be 20 moves later, but I win the game because I was willing to sacrifice the queen. Now I get to set up the board again. Well, guess what? I get the queen back. That's what they're doing. They're sitting there sacrificing the queen of the progressive income tax so that they can win the long game. They're going to say, well, we've just passed tax reform. Let's don't talk about anything else until we have to tweak this. There's a few problems with it. We're tweaking it. And they will delay and delay and delay and delay, and that will kill our inertia. And now we're back to ground zero, starting with no inertia and having to build up. It'll be 20 years. If we see a flat income tax, it'll be 20 years before anyone will talk about a fair tax again.
Well, I'd like to be around in 20 years, but who knows? John, what do you think? Maybe we could take a few callers if we have some callers on the line and move this thing forward, and then I'm sure people will want to ask you about your new book, and we can kind of just weave this through the whole conversation here. Bill Payne, do we have any callers on the line?
Yes, we do, as a matter of fact. And actually, I have.
All right.
I'm gonna call on one of them here real quick because she actually raised her hand early. Amazing.
Oh well, let's get her.
And I believe I recognize Nancy Kesey's number. Are you there, Nancy?
I surely am. John, I'm talking to John Gaber right now.
Okay.
I would like to ask you, there's something that haunts me a little. When I first saw Rubio and Lee on the Greta Show, I believe it was, one of the evening shows on Fox, offering their rendition with a big smile on their face. I think you have really hit the target with the thing we're up against, but that isn't my main question here. My question is, I was struck with the idea that perhaps this is an adaptation, parts anyway, from the Ryan plan, when he was offering up for his budget, et cetera. And also Dave Camp. Dave Camp had one of the most confusing plans I think I've ever heard, and I certainly didn't get into all of it, but I thought, I can't even follow this. I'm not sure what's happening. It's like he was saying, take XYZ out of this code number part, and on, and it was just razzle and dazzle. This seems to be really watered down as to what they presented. I'm not talking to the bill itself. But I'm wondering if they're just...
Go ahead. I was just saying that it sounds similar. I haven't really looked closely at the old ones because they're no longer an issue. I'm trying to focus on what's out there today, which is why I changed the focus of my new book from all these different plans to just a comparison of the flat tax and the fair tax. I'm just trying to stay focused on what is actually out there being talked about today. But I agree with you. Now, one of the things that I always, you know, that I see about Congress, anytime they propose a new kind of tax plan or anything in the private sector, whenever a business is going to make a major change, they talk to economists first, and those economists help shape their ultimate business plan. But in the public sector, politicians decide where they want to go, and then they hire the economists to find a justification for it, whether it works or not. And that's what I think is happening here with this Rubio Lee plan and with all these others. They're political plans, and if they have any economists supporting it, it's an economist that was brought in and hired specifically to find justification for that plan. And of
course,
your job is to say that this plan works, then, you know, that's what you're getting paid for doing. You're going to do the job. The thing that's good about the fair tax is that the three men in Houston who created it, they didn't actually create it. They hired economists, they hired pollsters, they hired sociologists, all the people to find out what the people wanted, then what they would accept, and then they hired the economists to fix the problem. They weren't told, come up with a sales tax. They were told, find the best fix. They were given their head, which is what businesses do. If they hire an economist, they don't say, you know, justify our business plan. They say, help us create our business plan. That's the difference in the way Washington works and the way the business world works. And it's the reason the fair tax works is because it was created by businessmen who hired the economist and gave them their head and said, fix the problem, instead of telling them what fix they wanted to apply.
Okay, thank you.
Nancy, if you're still on the line there, I'd like you kind of to give us a little update. I know there's been a lot of activity, and this kind of ties in with John's comments about inertia and fair tax. I know that there's been a lot going on PopVox around the country with common ordinary citizens like us that are expressing their views on taxation, and they're really turning out in record numbers in support of the Fair Tax Act. Maybe you could tell us what's happened since yesterday, since the announcement of the virtual march in Washington.
Well, we are currently at 2,641, and I believe those are supporters. I believe that at the end of the 113th Congress, we were at, I think it was 2,766. It was either 62 or 66. I have that written down somewhere. That took 2 years to generate. Think of 766. I'll use the biggest one. We are currently at 641. And on March 6th, we have been 2 months. I think that's absolutely amazing that we have been able to find the people who voted previously, and or we have replaced some we haven't been able to get the word out to by new people. And we are right in the middle of a very exciting time. And just let me look, one little thing here. I just upped it. I thought, oh, everybody's listening to the radio show and they're not voting. At 6 o'clock, our number was 634. 634. Right now, at 40 minutes of this next hour gone, we are at 641. We were at 12 votes per hour, 10 votes per hour before that, and 8 and 9 votes per hour. It just keeps chugging along. It's amazing me. It's exciting. I know many people obviously are going up and voting for the first time because we have this virtual trip that I know you'll talk about, John, later. But the trip to D.C., the virtual march, and people are responding, and we are very, very grateful that the word is getting out there, and people are beginning to realize this very thing John Gaber was talking about, inertia, which I happen to call momentum, but there is a difference in the relationship between those two words. And, you know, we have been moving upwards, and all of a sudden, we look like a jet taking off when you look at the graph. Those images, when a staffer of any congressional or senatorial office, or the congressman or the senator themselves, get a look at PopFox, it's pretty exciting right now because we are just leaving the opposing in the dust. And John pointed out, John Gaber pointed out, I guess maybe, John, it was almost a year ago when we were really trying to push the PopFox voting. You pointed out, and we had you post it, that it is not the numbers, it's the ratio. And this ratio right now is really looking good. It's 2,000.
94%, the Senate version is 94% support, and the House version is 95% support.
Right, exactly. But like when you turned that into ratio, I just, it really made sense to me, and I appreciate that. And I'd love it if off and on, maybe once a week or so, because I'm not the mathematician, that you could let me know what it is, because I think I've put out my third post trying to keep people up to date in the last 24 hours. But this over 200 now has happened in the last 24 hours, and I couldn't be happier. And thank God to all the people who are beginning to realize that none of us can do this. And as John said, if we don't put the pressure on and if we don't get in the face by saying, here we are, we're not going away, they are going to wind up just going ahead and passing that flat tax, and then we are going to be up a creek, just like John Gaber says. Hit it spot on, John. Taxes, spot on.
Flat tax would be the worst thing that could happen to tax reform.
Yep. And somehow that has to get out there. I mean, we say we don't want it, but nobody's out there saying it's the worst thing that could ever happen. And maybe that's our new message.
Right. They're going to say, oh, well, we need to pass the fair tax as a step in the right direction. But that once they get it passed, they're not going to want to take the next step for some year. Well, we've got to fix it. We've got to let this settle in before we can talk about it now.
Mm-hmm.
And the only purpose, the only reason they're even willing to talk about a flat income tax is because of our inertia. And I think that the fair tax is going to pass Congress in the 114th Congress. And, in fact, it probably wouldn't be that great of an idea because Obama's going to veto it. But in the 115th, it could. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't. If we get a fair tax president, yeah, it could go through in the 115th, if not the 116th. But the point is, it's a long game. And what
you bet.
We've been doing has been working. We started off when the fair tax was first created. People said, well, nobody will ever sponsor it in the House. Well, it got sponsored in the House in, 2002, 2005, when it was first introduced. they said, well, it won't get any support in Congress. Well, we closed out last year with 83 co-sponsors. They said, well, it won't get any support in the public. Well, in 2009, a Rasmussen poll showed that a national retail sales tax, not specifically the fair tax, a national retail sales tax had 43% support as opposed to 38% who said they thought a national retail sales tax would be bad. So every time they say we can't do something, we do it. They said, well, it'll never be heard in the Ways and Means Committee. Well, they were wrong again.
Mm-hmm.
We are moving forward, and this is a long game, and we cannot be suckered in because they exposed the Queen, and we're going to have to move a piece over there and take the Queen and do some other things. It's the whole idea is a stall tactic to get us to slow down. And we cannot do that because if they ever pass anything that they can even call substantive tax reform, whether it is or not, if they can call it substantive tax reform, anytime somebody else mentions anything, and to be fair, there are other systems out there that would eliminate the IRS, at least as we know it as it relates to individuals. The VAT tax would eliminate the IRS except as it relates to businesses. The libertarians are trying to push a thing where the state should be taxed, and they would collect taxes however they chose. That would eliminate the IRS. But the point is, none of those things would be talked about once they say, we've got tax reform, and if there's an income tax attached to that tax reform, they're not going to want to talk about anything else because we've got to give it a chance to work. And it's a delaying tactic to kill our inertia. And if we ever slow down, if we let that happen, we slow down, we have to start up again. It's like that elephant getting a charging elephant moving again. It takes some time.
Well, very well said, both of you. And, John, you are so right. It is a long game. I recall I've had a dog in this fight to end income tax since 1968. So I'll agree. It's a long game, but it's a worthwhile game, and it's a game we've got to win. I don't believe that we can fix the income tax any more than we can fix the IRS. I think our only choice is to get rid of both of them and start anew. And I can recall back in 68 what just a handful of people in the country thought the national retail sales tax was the way to go, and people would look at us and say, are you folks crazy? This country will never do away with the income tax. Well, look where we are today, ladies and gentlemen. We're very, very close to changing that.
Yeah, until we came up with the prebate, there was a problem there that people said, well, a sales tax is regressive. But the prebate changes that, and that was the key feature of the fair tax is the prebate, which suddenly makes a sales tax progressive, and that was the game changer for a lot of people, I'm sure.
Well, right, you are.
Yeah.
And you know, John, you make another point. You made a number of good points here this evening. No matter what we do, they're going to, and we've heard this, we were up at the Republican Spring Conference up in Sacramento a couple of weeks back, and we even heard people that are supposed to be conservatives, and they were saying, well, we just don't believe in the prebate. Well, you know, it's either too hot, too cold, too far, too near, too high, too low. There's always a reason why somebody is going to oppose a change because it involves what? Transferring power from the establishment back to we the people. Because when we get the power back, we will get to really exercise our freedom of choice. We can determine what we're going to pay in taxes by the way we consume things. They're not going to be able to take it right off the top. And that makes a big difference in our personal freedom. But I don't know if most Americans really have gotten their arms around that freedom of knowing I shall determine what I'm going to pay in taxes by the way I spend my money. But it isn't right. It's inherently wrong to tax people for their labor, for their energy. money that they make. One should not be taxed for success, and yet we are, and it has managed to do one thing. It's put a wet blanket on a lot of growth in this country, and you've addressed that many times when you visited with us about the money that has gone offshore. And my goodness, maybe before we get too far afield here, John, Bill Payne, do we have any other callers waiting on the line?
As a matter of fact, we do.
Yes, sir. Maybe you can open up the line. We give everybody a chance to talk to John here tonight.
Well, all righty. I see one here that I think I recognize this number as Frank Gilbert, our good, hardworking fair taxer from Ohio. Are you with us, Frank?
I am. Good evening. How are you folks tonight?
All right.
Breathing in and out, Frank. Thank you.
Good. Well, I wanted to say that I agree with everything you said. Oh, my God, I can't tell you how much I agree with him. And quite frankly, I was beginning to wonder about some of our constituents out there because we were so slow on pop blocks for a while. But all of a sudden, overnight in Ohio, we jumped up 8 votes, all positive. You know, people saw what Rubio and Lee were offering and are going, these guys are nuts. You know, people see through this stuff. The voters see an attempt by our so-called Republican friends to keep the power in Washington rather than restoring it to the citizens. I think they're seeing through it, and I think that really upset some people. I think that's why we got some more votes on Pop Box. And I certainly am one that's going to use that anger to garner more votes for the fair tax, because at least with Democrats, you know what their end game is. Our Republicans are supposed to represent us, and they're just no better than the other side at this point. We need true conservatives, and those are the guys that are the co-sponsors for the fair tax right now. Those are the ones that truly represent the constituents, and they're the ones that are deserving of our support.
Well, you know, the nice thing about the Rubio Lee plan is this is the best they were able to come up with. That's the amazing thing. That's the best that the power brokers were able to come up with, was something that was so easily shot down. I think that's
John, do you remember back in the 80s in the Reagan administration, there was a major tax reform at that time, and I think, if I remember correctly, wasn't it like a graduated flat tax that they tried to go with, but it didn't get rid of the IRS?
I remember there was something like that. Reagan, though, just to give you some statistics on Reagan, when Reagan took office, there were 16 tax brackets that paid tax. There was a 0% bracket down at the bottom, which would have made it 17. But there were 16 tax brackets for a single filer and 15 tax brackets for everybody else. And the top tax bracket was 70%. When Ronald Reagan left office, we were down to 2 tax brackets. Almost all of the deductions had been eliminated. The top tax bracket was 28%, and the bottom tax bracket was 15%. Reagan left office with those numbers on January 20th, 1989. Do you know when they added the next tax bracket? November of 1990.
And that's how much
less
good
than 2 years.
It does to have a flat tax of any kind, particularly if it leaves the IRS in place.
Yes. The Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act of 1990, passed in November, gave us the first, we went from 2 tax brackets to 3, and they did exactly what I've said over the years would happen, was that they said, well, the flat, getting it so flat like this is hurting the middle class. A flat income tax hurts the middle class. There's no way around it. You're going to continue
right.
to have the standard. You're going to have the standard deduction, so the poor are going to be in the same boat regardless. The rich are going to get a huge tax cut, and the middle class are going to make up the difference. So they saw that, and they said, well, we need to add another tax bracket in here, and we got a third tax bracket. And then Clinton took office, and right after that, we got 2 more tax brackets. Every president since Reagan left office has overseen the addition of at least one other tax bracket and dozens more carve-outs and tax breaks in the tax code. Every president has overseen that, has at least one tax bracket added since Reagan left office. A flat tax just will not stay flat.
I was a younger man back then and wasn't very much into politics at that time, but as I recall, our tax code was something like 40 or 45,000 pages at that time. And with massive restructuring that we did under the Reagan administration, we're now at, with the Obama care code in there, at
74,600 pages.
Well, that was without Obamacare, right?
Yeah. The as of at the end of 2014, let me see if I can find it here real quick. Ah, here it is. Tax law pile up. As of the end of 2014, we're at 70. No, that was the wrong one. That's 2013. It's 74,600 pages, I believe. I'll look it up here in my my manuscript for my next book, and I know where that one is. And it is 70,000. There's 5,248 pages in the tax code itself, but to understand it all, you have to look at all the judgments, the rulings, decisions,
right?
You know, supporting legislation, all the forms and everything else. That makes up 74,608 pages at the end of 2014.
Of which no one understands completely.
Nobody
ipso facto.
Tax lawyers and accountants cannot understand the entire tax code.
Right.
So what's
the one thing we need to keep stressing? I'm sorry, the one thing we need to keep stressing, too, is whenever you call the IRS, 9 times out of 10, you'll get a different answer.
And they don't understand it either.
Absolutely not.
Here's the thing. Anytime you get audited, you go there, and you've tried your best, and you've got the best accountants, and you said, I want to be as conservative as possible. You know, I don't want to have any problems, but you missed something. And they say, well, you should have used this section of code to interpret it instead of this other section. And you've tried your best, and you say, well, we looked at this section, but we didn't think it applied because of thus and so and whatever reasons. They're going to say, well, we're the IRS. We get to choose, and you're wrong, and we're right. And even when you say, but I didn't know, they're going to fall back on, you know, our laws are based on English common law. And one of
there
the most basic principles of English common law is ignorance of the law is no excuse. And that's what
it's
they're
going
to do. They're as ignorant as anybody else.
Ipso facto. But they created a law that even they don't understand.
Absolutely, gentlemen.
No living person can comprehend a 74,000 pages needed to understand it all. Because, again, every time the court moves, every time the IRS makes their own decision, their administrative decision, all of these go into the CCH, that's Commerce Clearinghouse Standard Tax Recorder. They've been tracking this since 1913. At the end of 1913, the Standard Tax Recorder was 400 pages long. And today it's 74,608.
Well, I think, gentlemen, it's a consensus out there amongst we the people that our tax system is dysfunctional, diabolical, and pernicious. I've yet to ask a single soul, and I don't know what political persuasion they're from. If I ask them a couple of questions, what do you think of keeping the IRS? And they'll say, you kidding? Let's dump it. And what do you think of income tax and payroll tax? We don't need that either. I find very, very, I've yet to run into a person that will defend either of those things. And I'll tell you that when I go in front of a city council or a town council, I always remember one thing. It's everything that happens in government is on the backs of a taxpayer. A taxpayer is paying for everything, the buildings you stand in, this, your secretaries, your automobiles, everything that moves in this government is funded by taxpayers, yet you and government disconnect from us. You don't think that we have any brains, that we have any intelligence, any know-how, and yet our money is good, but you disconnect from us like we have no voice and we are getting tired of it. So I think we're going to have to pull out some of these establishment politicians that think that they can pick the choices for us, and we're going to sit back and just say yes sir, no sir, and not oppose what they're doing, because what they're doing is extortion, and we've got to put a bloody end to it. Gentlemen, and thank you, Frank. You always have some great comments. Bill Payne, do we have any other callers on the line, sir?
We have a number of people on the line, but nobody with their hand up.
All right.
By hand up, I mean you pressed one on your phone after you've, if you're sitting there on hold listening to the show and you want to talk, press one. That's all.
If you there you go.
While you're doing it, let me, for anybody that missed it earlier, let me read that code off. If anyone wants to order the book at a discount, and go out to therichdon'tpaytax.com, click on Buy Paperback, and when you go out there through the purchase section, there will be a place where it'll ask for a discount code. The discount code is 3, B as in Baker, Q as in Queen, D as in Dog, N as in Nancy, 3, J as in John, 3. That's 3BQDN3J3, and that'll get you a $1.50 discount off the book.
That's a good deal, John.
Anyone else with questions?
Well, I would hope that somebody out there would want to raise their hand and tell us to get tough with the people in Washington, but maybe not.
Here, let me read this off. This is from the Tax Foundation. 1913, the tax brackets were 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%, 5%, 6%, and 7%. The top being $500,000 and over, and nobody was earning that much money back then, or very few. So
yes.
Basically, and they were incremented, so you paid 1% on everything up to $20,000, and then you paid 2% on everything from $20,000 to $50,000, and then you paid 3% on everything from $50,000 to $75,000, and so on and so forth. It was sort of hokey, but, you know, that's actually what the Tax Foundation is showing here on their website for 1913 tax brackets. And they have a PDF out there that shows tax brackets every year up to the current time.
Yeah, there weren't many people even paying the 1% back in that time.
Right. But what's just amazing is that when Ronald Reagan took office, we were still at 70%. That just blows me away. Yeah, so we were 73% was the high in 1921, and you go right on up, it just gets higher. But there were times when we had, you know, 20 tax brackets. Yeah,
incredible.
Reagan got in, we had 16 tax brackets, the highest being 70%. And when he left, we had 2 tax brackets, 15%, 28%. And I think it broke at $17,500 was the breakover from the 15% to the 28%.
Well, that's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it was surprisingly low, but here we go. This is, 17 for a single person, $17,850 was the breakover. Anything over $17,850 was 28%.
Well, John, thank you for all this good information.
We saw how that worked, though, how long it stayed that way.
Absolutely, and you've been spot on so far. Bill Payne, any hands up yet?
Well, we have excuse me, only one hand up, and that would be Nancy Kesey, and I'll put her back on.
Please do.
You're on, Nancy.
Well, I don't know what happened. How did I press the one? But that's perfectly fine. You caught me unaware here. I didn't think I'd be posing a question. Gosh, I don't know. I just feel that something John said tonight is extremely important to us, and that is the idea of how devastating a flat tax would be, because people are going to ask, oh, really? Why is that? And that gives us a place to go. You know, we're used to just kind of dismissing it. Oh, you don't want that because you still have the IRS. But John has made it very, very clear that this is a placeholder. If they pass anything that they can say is tax reform, then we're going to be stuck if we want to see a consumption tax in quite a ways down the road. So I think that's a pearl that we really have to grab onto somehow.
Yeah, it will stop all talk about tax reform for at least a decade, and then it'll take us another decade to build back up from, you know, a dead stop to get back to where we are today. So we're looking at 20 years minimum if they were to pass a flat tax. And I say, you know, we know, everybody knows Mike Huckabee is a great fair tax supporter. But I would almost guarantee you that if he were to become president, and let's say he became president and served 8 years, if he were to become president, I bet you within the first quarter, Congress would deliver a flat income tax bill to his desk in hopes that he would be fooled into signing that. Because if he did, they would then, after that, every time he mentioned the fair tax, they'd say, Mr. President, you just signed into law real tax reform. Let's give it time to work.
Right.
And even Mike would not be able to get it through, because that let's give it time to work thing would be repeated and repeated and repeated in the media, in Congress, everywhere. We would be stuck. We cannot.
You're right, and I think it's important too. In along with the idea that it would be bad for us, we need to tell them why, in no uncertain terms, why it's so important to them, the legislators, to hang on to an income tax, and we all know why that is, but that they just don't want to let go of that power, to put it as simple as anything. And I think those two things have to be, you know, kind of hand in hand. So I'm really grateful for that tonight, John. I'm always looking for something that is a little different way to say something that we all know, but we sometimes just don't bring it to the level where it enters other people's lives, daily lives, and I think that's really important.
That's true. When you hear a politician say we need to pass a flat income tax and eliminate the IRS, the first thing we ought to be doing is saying, how are you going to eliminate the IRS when you've still got 156 million people paying tax? They're going to have to be audited.
Amen to that, John.
Find out what they've got, why they think they can eliminate it. And they say, oh, well, it'll be a smaller IRS. It won't be as invasive. Well, wait a minute.
Ladies and gentlemen, before we close out the show tonight, we want to have you pitch your book before we close it out. I would like to take just a couple of minutes and let's talk about our virtual march on Washington, D.C., which is underway right now, really. And I think this has a lot to do with the activity that we're seeing on Popbox. Of course, we can't all go to Washington, D.C. We can't leave our jobs. Some of us, you know, it's an expensive thing to go there. I'm sure there will be some people that will march into Washington, D.C., and we'll go into some congressional offices, and we'll state the fair tax claim and story and try to get support, and that's a good thing. But for the rest of us, we still need a voice, and I think that Popbox has offered us a great tool to do that. And between now and the 15th of April, we will try to get the word out to people, and I hope, John, you and Nancy will keep us apprised of developments from week to week, because a lot is going to be happening between now and April the 15th. And with that, John, why don't you give us your contact information one more time? And Nancy, thank you so much. And Bill, when John is done, why don't you take us out with a good tax song?
I could do that, except that we actually have another caller with their hand up.
Oh, and then you better take the caller. That's what we're about.
Let's do that first.
Yes, sir.
I don't really recognize the number, but I recognize the area code from Washington, the state of Washington. And who do we have with us, and where are you calling from?
This is Jamie Wheeler on her cell phone, and I'm calling from Kennewick.
Well, hello, Jamie.
I had a feeling that was you.
I wanted to jump in because in addition to this virtual that you were talking about and going on to PopVox, I also wanted to encourage all of us, including all of our listeners out there, to also virtually walk on DC, not only by voting in PopVox, but also by making a phone call or gathering up. We're doing a tax day countdown calling campaign where we're hoping to get at least five people for the 7 days prior to tax day to call and get them on, you know, share about getting them on board with the fair tax. And I would like to challenge all fair tax supporters out there to do the same. Get 35 people and get those phones ringing for the week before tax day.
Hallelujah. I agree with that. I'm in favor of anything that keeps the momentum, the inertia going. And so right you are, Jamie. And we ought to do all of that. And if you're on the run, it makes good sense to go up to PopVox, too, because after you're registered, you can go in and you can weigh in on a lot of different bills, not just taxation. It could be gun owner rights, immigration, anything that trips your trigger. It could be energy. Who knows? We have a lot of issues in the country that really demand our attention. But so right you are, Jamie, and I appreciate you bringing that up.
You're so welcome. I just want to let people know that I know we've got some rallies here that are protesting the tax day, and it makes me sad that they don't use it to promote a solution. So I'm hoping that if there's anything that's fighting against, you know, a protest, that maybe somehow they can bring in the solution. So we're doing good things, and we're looking forward to the next couple of years. I also would like to mention Kerry Bowers as a presidential election opportunity candidate, who's hugely for the fair tax. So,
yes, indeed. Yes, indeed he is. And a great man indeed.
So, yeah, so go Fair Tax, and we'll see you guys on Fair Tax Nation.
Sounds like a deal. We're liking it. Thank you, Jamie.
You're so welcome. Have a great night, guys.
All right. Any other callers, Bill?
No, we're actually, we have a couple of other people that haven't found the number one on their phone, but that's all right. We don't worry about that. I don't want to bother them, but they don't want to be bothered. So
I just noticed the pop box for HR 25. In the last 10 minutes, we've gone from 2641 to 2647 supporting.
Pretty darn good, John. Pretty good. John, why don't you give us your book information again? And Bill, you pick out a good song, and we'll head on home.
Okay. Well, the book is Rich Don't. The book is The Rich Don't Pay Tax, or Do They? It's available in print, Kindle, and Nook format. You can go to therichdontpaytax.com. There are three buttons on the side. Just buy paperback. I've given the discount code. If you want to buy it in paperback, it's normally $9.95. It's $1.50 discount if you put in the code 3BQDN3J3. You've also got buttons over there for buy Kindle, which takes you to the Amazon website. Sorry, I can't discount that. Buy Nook takes you to the Barnes & Noble website, and I can't discount that. I'll have another book coming out before too terribly long, which is going to be an analysis of the fair tax compared against the flat income tax. And we haven't decided on a name just yet. We're deciding on name and cover probably in the next week or two. So but watch for that one to come out too. The book basically goes into actual IRS collections data. It has tons of links in the book. You can type in the URLs and actually go get the source data, and it is highly, highly documented, proves that the wealthy are really paying a tremendous amount of tax. The most recent data is that the top 1% of income earners pay more than 38% of the taxes. They earn less than 22% of the income. But because the Joint Committee on Taxation tells us half of Americans don't earn enough to have any tax liability, that means that top 1% is the top half, economic half percent of all Americans. So these are the people that are being punished dramatically, and they're leaving. And that's one of the points I make in the book, is that we are losing. Since Obama took office, we've seen a 1,700% increase in formal renunciations of people who fit probably in the top half percent of all taxpayers. So check out the book, if you would, therichdon'tpaytax.com, and there's a blog. Go to the blog. I try to post things out there as often as possible. Because I'm writing a book, it's kind of hard to do that and keep the blog up, but I do post things from time to time. A lot of the stuff that we just talked about tonight is on my latest article. So check it out if you get a chance. Bill?
Yes, I was typing there. putting your links and stuff in the chat room there to make sure everybody there got a chance to actually physically see them. Because sometimes, you know, you say, oh, what was that? I wonder what he said. And if he didn't repeat himself, and he said, oh, I can't find my doggone pen or whatever. You know what I mean? So everybody panics sometimes. Well, I don't panic, but, you know, some people panic. So anyway, John, I want to thank you very, very much for being with us. I got to tell everybody, if you have not read The Rich Don't Pay Tax, or do they, read it. You know, don't be a dumbass the rest of your life. Just read the book. It's a fantastic book, and it's actually very, very well researched and well documented. I'm real proud. I have a hard copy here with John's autograph in it. And it occupies a space at the top of my bookshelf. I'm real proud of that one. So I do recommend it very much so, and I'm looking forward to the new one coming out. And hopefully that won't be too long. Do you have a proposed or expected date on that yet, John?
Well, we're working on it. It's, like I said, things have changed. I had a lot of stuff already done involving a European VAT and the Hall-Robuska VAT and some other, you know, types of tax reform. But after listening to what's going on at CPAC, it became obvious that all these other plans seem to have gone away. Nobody's talking about 999 or any of the VATs or anything. So it's basically down to the fair tax and a flat income tax. And so I decided that it's more important to keep this flat income tax from ever, you know, seeing a light of day, because if that happens, real tax reform is lost for another decade or two. So I changed directions. I'm hoping to get it out. I'm hoping to get it to the proofreader probably sometime in late April. You know,
I'm going
to be speaking at some conferences in June, and that means we have to get it into the proofreader in April. Get it back in May, make some changes, get it off to the printers and everything so that I'll have it ready for when I go to the conferences in June in South Carolina, Iowa, and New Hampshire, among other places.
Well, see, now that ought to tell everybody something really important. It kind of probably goes in one ear and out the other. He actually sends his material to a proofreader. How about that? As opposed to publishing a book with at least 12 mistakes on each page. This man, John Gaber, actually ends up with a very, very professionally written book without a bunch of misspellings and poor grammar usage and atrocious punctuation and so on and so forth. This is, if you speak English and understand the language, you're going to love it.
Yeah. The other thing I try to do is I use what they tell you. Anytime you're writing something political, you write for a seventh grader. And half of the general public won't understand what you're saying.
That tells you a lot.
Oh, John, that's a great one-liner.
It's difficult, though, because you got to write for a seventh grader but make it interesting enough for a college graduate. And if you're walking a very thin line...
John, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
All right. Bill, thank you so much, sir, and I hope you've chosen a good song to take us out on.
Well, there's not a whole lot that I have that are actually outro-type songs, but I do have one by our good buddy Tommy Davis out of Georgia, and he wrote a song that he's actually published called Fingerprinted Fool, and when I heard this song, I thought, we got to have that one. And he gave us permission to use it. Here it is, called Fingerprinted Fool by Tommy Davis.
Yeah, a long time ago, when the taxes were high and the redcoats were kicking in our doors, well, the good men did stand up and remember the reason they'd sailed for these distant shores. When the voice of the people rises up to be heard, and the statutes that bind them are undone, well, their spirit will rise like the song of a bird, and you can read about the freedom they'd won. But I'm just a fingerprint fool, you know I am. I've left a digitized, encoded trail across our land. I'm a pull-my-string-good puppet for my grand old Uncle Sam. I'm a fingerprint fool, you know I am. I remember the stories from when I was a child. My father said, don't trust those suits and ties, 'cause the character of a man comes from his working hands, and there is no heart in a dealer of lies. Well, I'm gonna raise a son who's as honest as me. Gonna teach him how to look beyond the shroud. He won't follow pretty words to a need enough chains. No, he won't be his sheep in the crowd. But I'm just a fingerprinted fool, you know I am. They got me over a barrel now, just because they can. Well, I took my watch.